Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of President Obama's apparent strong card in this election, his foreign policy, that so far does not seem to be a winning issue in this presidential campaign. James Mann, a former foreign correspondent with the Los Angeles Times, who is author in residence at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, joins us. He's the author of the new book, The Obamians, The Struggle Inside the White House to Redefine American Power. Then we will speak with Tom Hayden, a founding member of Students for a Democratic Society, who later served 18 years in the California legislature. He has been in close contact with Julian Assange's defense team, and we will examine the limited legal options open to the WikiLeaks founder, who addressed the world today from the balcony of the Ecuadorian embassy in London, where he is holed up, calling on the United States to end its witch hunt against WikiLeaks. Then finally, we will speak with Dr. Trita Parsi, the co-founder and president of the National Iranian American Council and author of The Single Roll of the Dice, Obama's Diplomacy with Iran. We will discuss the increasing rumors of war coming from Israel that an attack on Iran is imminent and examine the possible consequences of the targeting of leadership and nuclear and rocket scientists, which are contained in an alleged leak of Israeli war plans. Joining us now is James Mann, a former Washington reporter, columnist, and foreign correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He's the author in residence at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, and he's the author of many books on global affairs and U.S. foreign policy, including The Rise of the Vulcans, The Rebellion of Ronald Reagan, The China Fantasy, and his latest book just out is The Obamians, The Struggle Inside the White House to Redefine American Power. Welcome to Background Briefing, James Mann.
Good to be with you, Ian.
Now, the foreign policy, as I mentioned in the opening, seems to be the strong card, particularly the having killed bin Laden, etc. But it doesn't seem to be translating. Is that something that's endemic with American elections, that it's not, foreign policy is not really a strong card, or is this just not getting any traction?
Well, I see it a little differently. It's not that it is failing to work for Obama. I think it's failing to work for the challenges to him. Romney has sort of failed to make a foreign policy challenge to Obama, and the nomination of Ryan just is, in a way, confirms that foreign policy is not what he's going to concentrate on. It is different from other campaigns. There are many campaigns in which foreign policy is an issue. Obama was his main issue in 2008, and certainly candidates like Reagan, or if you go to the 72 campaign on Vietnam, there are a lot of campaigns in which foreign policy is a big issue.
Well, it's pretty clear that this is going to be a close election. I think obviously, if President Obama had. If he gets the same votes that he got in 2008, I think it would be a landslide. But the sense is that the Republicans are leveling the playing field by an aggressive amount of money that's being spent through super PACs, unprecedented amounts of money. Suppression of the vote, I think 5 million people have been struck off the rolls. There's a chance that the lack of enthusiasm, if you will, from those who were swept up in the idea of hope and change in 2008 and who are disappointed now, and frankly, a lot of the Republican commercials in this campaign have indicated that aren't you disappointed and that he didn't deliver, etc. What's your just general reading, James Mann, of how this election's going? Because in many ways it feels as though that perhaps in 2008 President Obama promised too much and he may well pay for it in 2012.
Well, a couple things. You're making a good point. In general, my observation on the failure of Romney to create any kind of coherent challenge on foreign policy. That's true. The point you make is that because of foreign policy, former Obama supporters or Obama supporters are less enthusiastic about Obama than they used to be. And I, you know, I can't tell, we can't tell what the turnout's going to be. It can be that people who no longer see Obama in as hopeful terms as they did will still feel every bit as strongly as before that the Democratic candidate is preferable to the Republican candidate. In fact, they may feel that this election is even more important than last. So you don't see the excitement out there because it's really an incumbent president. But I'm not sure yet that that's going to influence the election.
Well, one of the things that might influence the election is, I mean, I mentioned the unprecedented amount of money that's being spent and the extent to which already, according to the Brennan Center, 5 million eligible Democrats may not be able to vote. I mean, it does seem a kind of extraordinary paradox that Americans who have voted before and who are eligible to vote and who want to vote Democrat have to jump through hoops, whereas billionaires who are essentially buying the election for the Republicans don't have to reveal who they are. That is the state we're in terms of what would seem to me to be a kind of a disparity or not a particularly level playing field. But that's what we have in this year. This seems to be the year of the money, isn't it, James Mann?
I hope not. I agree on the billionaires. On the voter suppression, I don't think we should get into
right
sort of believing that this election is doomed before we actually see what happens and people get registered to vote. I think it becomes a way of giving up on the election, which is in some ways a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right. Well, it also, you know, as you said earlier, a lot of people have already given up on Obama too. So there is a passivity on the Democratic side and a great sense of activism on the Republican side. That much appears to me to be the situation. But what about a wild card here in terms of foreign policy coming back front and center in this election with what is now being rumored in the Israeli press at a fevered pitch now, the notion that Prime Minister Netanyahu and Defense Minister Barak are intent on attacking Iran possibly soon and before the elections. That's a wild card that's pretty hard to determine the outcome, surely.
I agree that if that happens, who knows what the implications are going to be. I still don't think it's going to happen. But yeah, if that happened in the first place, you could have a major run-up of gas prices and so on. The implications are so far-reaching that it's hard to see. I mean, you could have tough action by Obama in connection with it. You could have vicious attacks by Romney, or you could have Romney put in the position where he's forced to support Obama. You really can't predict, but that is the biggest wild card that I can see out there.
Again, I'm speaking with James Mann, a former Washington reporter, columnist, and foreign correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He's the author and resident at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies and the author of many books on global affairs and U.S. foreign policy, including The Rise of the Vulcans, The Rebellion of Ronald Reagan, The China Fantasy, and his latest book, just out, is The Obamians, The Struggle Inside the White House to Redefine American Power. Now, The your previous book, James Mann, of course, about the rise of the Vulcans, was in in many ways a portrayal of the foreign policy team that George W. Bush brought to the table, and the people that brought us the Iraq War, and I suppose to the Afghan War, although President Obama decided to own that one. I don't know whether he rused that. Does he remember? He basically said Iraq was a disaster, but we took our eye off the ball, and Afghanistan was what we should have concentrated on. At that point, he seems to own that war. Is that his cross to bear, do you think?
Well, anyone who thought in 2009 that he was going to take office and phase out or scale down the war in Afghanistan just wasn't listening in the campaign, because he made that clear all along. He has, and in that sense, he owns war. He has done a 180-degree turn on his military strategy. So in 2009, the idea was to send more and more troops because he bought into the idea of counterinsurgency. He may claim now that he didn't, but that is what happened in 2009. And after 18 months or so, without admitting that he'd been wrong on that, he saw the wisdom of switching to a strategy of counterterrorism, which means less reliance on troops, but more on drones.
And now that we have all of this fratricide, where the people that we're helping, the greatest number of casualties are now coming from Afghan soldiers who turn their guns on their American trainers, and this seems to be happening on a daily basis, and is responsible for most of the casualties as the war is winding down. That surely does, in very stark terms, doesn't it, James Mann, sort of indicate the kind of folly of this war and the dubious nature of what we're going to leave behind?
I'd take it a step further. I think it also changes the underlying politics in the sense that it gives within the military a strong sense that, you know, what are we doing here? If you have the people who are actually fighting the war increasingly afraid that the people they're supposed to be defending are going to turn their guns on them, then you have a military that's not particularly eager to stay as long as you can, or to simply show that we can win this war. And that's a major change.
So I sort of digressed a little to Afghanistan, but I was about to ask you about the going back to your earlier book on the rise of the Balkans. It does strike me as an irony that the entire foreign policy team that Mitt Romney has are pretty much the people who brought us the Iraq War. And I was just noticing in the Los Angeles Times that there's a story that the Obama administration is desperately trying to weigh in on the Iraq government, the people that we put in power, to stop breaking the sanctions against Iran. So there in a way you have it. The neoconservatives brought us this disastrous war that's benefited Iran, and to the point now where the White House is begging the government that they put in, and at the enormous expense of blood and treasure on the part of Americans, and asking them to help them out, which of course is a somewhat futile, I would think. What do you think that Obama's going to bring up? This idea that Mitt Romney will be a throwback to George W. Bush, if indeed the people who are in his team are the ones that are going to run his foreign policy, which he appears to be outsourcing to the neoconservatives.
Couple points on that. First, I mean, I agree about Iraq and the direction it's headed on its relationship with Iran. On the Republican team around Romney, or what Romney's foreign policy people would be, I think there's a little bit of crying wolf here, or, you know, the sky is falling. There are some neoconservatives in Romney's team, and a bunch of people that aren't. It really isn't the same cast of characters by and large. When I look up close at it, there are quite a few differences. It's notable who's not there. Cheney's too old and sick. Rumsfeld's too old. Wolfowitz isn't there. And there was a little action about the week before Ryan was named that was kind of revealing. Romney announced that the coordinator who would put together his transition if he won this election was a guy named Robert Zoellick, who was head of the World Bank, very much, and the right wing was up in arms, complaining because Zoellick is considered, within the Republican perspective, a moderate. And that's just one position. There's another. I noticed that for Secretary of the Treasury, there's a former Bush 41 alumnus named Robert Kimmett. Well, these were the two guys who worked at the right hand of James Baker. I mean, there isn't much of them. Of a grassroots moderate Republicans, that's hard to find them out there. But within the Republican elite, you still get some of the spectrum. And so it's possible that some of the people who worked for Bush may come back. But I think, I'm frankly not sure we're going to find out. I think probably... I would hope Obama does better than that. But if Romney were to win, I'm not sure that it would be a return of the Bush team at all.
So, James Mann, then, is that to say then that that the idea of the neoconservatives taking over has been exaggerated by those within those ranks who are promoting themselves? I mean, John Bolton has more or less indicated that he would like to be Secretary of State. So is that just self-promotion?
And I used to sit there at the L.A. Times Washington Bureau, and you could tell who wanted to be have a job after Election Day, because down around January, February, March, all of their articles and their press releases and anything they had ever did would arrive in the offices of the LA Times or other major papers. And Bolton was always top on the list. Bolton may be promoting himself, but to be honest, I actually think that there's a bit of a... He is a name around which the left can coalesce. And so there's a bit of putting him forward as having a greater chance than he has, I have to admit.
Well,
I don't think it's going to happen.
Sure. Well, just returning to your book, James Mann, where you've taken us into the back rooms of the White House, the Pentagon, the State Department, the CIA, to reveal the interplay between the events, foreign policy events that have taken place, the ideas, the personality, and the conflicts that drive American foreign policy with this extremely different group of foreign policy people on the National Security Council, not... a new inner circle, if you will, relatively youthful advisors, some that came out of a kind of humanitarian foreign policy, like Samantha Power and others. As we started out saying that, you know, maybe the foreign policy record, which Obama, I think, is his strong suit, somehow isn't really getting a lot of traction. Is it the irony, James Mann, that if we are at war, good war, bad or indifferent, and it's hard to find too many good wars, that becomes the focus of everybody's attention. But when you're getting out of wars, people forget about them. I mean, the Obama's virtue, I suppose, is he is getting us out of wars. And Bush's sin was that he got us into wars, particularly ones that went badly. Is that a problem, that unless we're in the midst of a shooting war, nobody seems to care?
It is something that has happened over and over again. I mean, I'll phrase this. I agree that is correct, that foreign policy becomes less and less of an issue. And to put it in nonpartisan terms, in this particular case, it's true for Obama. Many analyses of the 1992 election that Bill Clinton won rely on the fact that the Cold War was over and foreign policy wasn't an issue. So... If the Cold War had still been on, then that would have Clinton didn't have foreign policy experience, and George Bush Sr. had it in spades. But the country felt free to register its concern on domestic issues. That's why Winston Churchill lost after World War II as well. So there's a lot of history for this, but it's certainly true. But I don't know that it's negative for Obama. It means that he has just deprived the Republicans of the issue that they have run on election after election, dating back to, I don't know, the 50s, that somehow the Democrats are weak on defense.
Well, James Mann, I thank you again for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with James Mann, who's a former Washington reporter, columnist, and foreign correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. He's the author in residence at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. He's the author of many books on global affairs and U.S. foreign policy, including The Rise of the Vulcans, The Rebellion of Ronald Reagan, The China Fantasy, and his latest book just out is The Obamians, The Struggle Inside the White House to Redefine American Power. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the standoff at the Ecuadorian embassy in London where Julian Assange is holed up.